south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in a real-world studio again with a nice mic. And today, well, I have a ton of emails that I have to get to, so we'll start with that. But first, just a little something I came across about the topic of happiness, because, you know, people talk about happiness in Latin America, how it tops the charts and beats the hell out of first world people in their so-called version of happiness. The million-dollar question is, how could such poor folks be so happy? Anyway, I ran across this article. It says, in 1974, economist Richard Easterlin showed that greater income was associated with greater happiness for individuals, but not so at the aggregate national level. Oddly enough, rich countries are not happier than poor countries, just the reverse. And therein lies the so-called Easterlin paradox, where wealthier individuals are generally happier, but wealthier nations are not. In other words, he proved that if you have dough and you live in a shithole country, you'll be a lot happier than if you have dough and you live in a first world country. That is a paradox, isn't it? So, in effect, the late rapper, the notorious B.I.G., remember that guy, that obese rapper with the gold grill and that 10-word vocabulary? He was completely correct with the title of his hit song, quote, "Mo' Money, Mo' Problems." Well, that's certainly true in the first world, but not necessarily true down here in third world Latin America. So then what about people who win the lottery? Well, the article goes on to say, more recent studies have documented an increase in life satisfaction for recent lottery winners, at least for the first few years. But the study shows for lottery winners, there's not a corresponding increase in happiness, just life satisfaction. Temporarily, that is. Of course, most of us secretly like to hear stats like that because we're not lottery winners. We don't want to hear that lottery winners are extremely happy, do we? Because we, nor do people we know, win the lottery. By the way, everybody knows that the U.S. levied its federal income tax in 1913 as a temporary measure. It was the 16th Amendment. Yeah, right. As economist Nobel laureate Milton Friedman said, nothing is so permanent as a temporary government program. So anyway, 1913 was a terrible year. The 16th Amendment levying federal income taxes and the creation of the Federal Reserve. Double whammy, huh? But here's what you didn't know. In Canada, they also levied a temporary income tax back in 1917, a couple of years after the States. And that temporary income tax never went away. It just got worse and worse and worse. Puts the average Canadian in the 65% tax bracket when all taxes, provincial and otherwise, are considered. That means the average Canadian works as a slave for the government till about September 1st of every year. Now, of course, the average American's only in about the 50% tax bracket, all taxes, state, federal, and local considered. What a gift, huh? Ever ask yourself, just what do I get for that? How about massive bureaucracy in a huge corrupt welfare state? So U.S. citizens pay about 50% of their income to the government. That means you guys are only tax slaves working for the government till around July 1st of every year. Once in a while, you know, I get into discussions with people about this U.S. taxation thing. When I say you're taxed at 50% or more, they don't believe it. They always cite the federal tax bracket they're in, as if that's the only tax that counts. That's why I put together a little cheat sheet that shows all the taxes and fees and commissions and levies you pay the government to prove that point. If you want a copy of that, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Oh, and just one more thing before we get to those emails. It's a little news about banking and money and ATMs here in Latin America. Now, I don't know if this kind of stuff happens up in the first world, up in the U.S., but it might. It seems like every couple of weeks or so, down here anyway, someone robs an ATM machine. Well, it's usually not just one guy, it's a couple of guys. Sometimes they even rip it out of the wall in a mall or a cubbyhole on the street, you know, where they have those things. And they haul it off somewhere to take it apart. However they do, it sounds like a lot of work. Sometimes they get caught, sometimes they don't. But here's the thing, there's so much of that going on here in Latin America that the ATM companies are now planting trip switches in the ATMs like they do in pinball machines, you know, you hit it or move it too much, it tilts, game over. So anyway, down here in Latin America, ATM companies are putting in their version of tilt switches in their machines. When activated, the money gets sprayed with a colored dye. But so what, right? It's still money. It's still spendable. Well, listen to this. News just this week coming out of Ecuador. It says the Asociación de Bancos Privados, that's the private bank association, is warning citizens and businesses not to accept or change money that's stained or inked. Stained money will be treated as stolen money. Even if you didn't steal it yourself, it will be confiscated. It says banking institutions have agreed not to take these bills, treating them as invalid. It says, in fact, they've got a system that was implemented in 2021 to spray the bills with ink for the 4,800 ATMs in Ecuador. It says you can identify these bills if you have them because there's a violet, green, blue, or black ink stain that extend from the edges of the bill to the center. The ink, it says, is non-toxic but permanent and can't be washed off or removed by any substance or process. So if you got one or more of those bills, you certainly got it legally. But beware, some people won't take them, and certainly banks won't. By the way, I understand those bills do have some resale value if you go to one of the big markets, you know, those chaotic, gigantic food and produce markets. Rumor has it there's always someone there that'll take those bills for less than face value. Maybe a lot less. Who knows? By the way, you expats and gringos, have you seen any of those inked bills around? Just wondering. I have. I've seen one or two. By the way, I noticed recently, and you probably have too, there are a lot of expat rags talking about the marvels and wonders of living in Europe, especially places like Spain, Italy, and Portugal, and, of course, Eastern Europe, Lithuania, Romania, Poland, Hungary, etc. Even Turkey. Personally, I can't see why anyone would want to have their plan B in Europe, but that's just me. Lots of problems. The EU is even more broke than the U.S. Muslim, Christian, and Jewish hatred everywhere. The illegal problem is horrendous. Some little towns, cities, and barrios are completely Muslim, and the police won't even go in. And I'm talking about countries that are historic and beautiful. France, Italy, Spain, England. People from the Middle East keep sneaking in, and boats from Africa are pouring in. In fact, the last time I was there, not so long ago, I went to the top of the Rock of Gibraltar. Have you ever done it? You know, that's the tightest, closest span between Africa and Europe. When I was up there, sitting in a little cafe just for an hour or so, I saw two overstuffed boatloads of Africans, illegal refugees, of course, making their way towards Spain or Italy or anywhere their boat would take them to on the European mainland. But still, most expat rags are telling you how wonderful it would be to live in Spain, Portugal, Italy, even Dubai, etc., etc. But what they don't tell you is taxes in Europe are higher than the U.S., especially if you're a working person. Did you know that if you're self-employed or you run your own business in any European country, 20-something countries, that is. Did you know if you're self-employed, that is, you run your own business, just like in the U.S. or Canada, you have to pay into the Social Security system. If you live and work there and have a business, you'll pay 25% into their Social Security system, their FICA. Now, of course, if you're self-employed in the States, it's around 15%, which is killer anyway. But just imagine paying 25%. You know, I've been to Europe before and after COVID. And this last time, I had a long talk with a taxi driver in Spain. I was in his car for about an hour. By the way, he was driving a hybrid Toyota RAV4. How about that? Wasn't his, of course. It was the leasing company's. He said practically no taxi driver can afford its own taxi. In fact, he told me the average taxi driver makes about 2,000 euros a month. That's about 2,200 US dollars a month. If he made that kind of money in the States, he'd be at the edge of poverty. He said, in Spain, a decent apartment starts at 1,500 euros a month, so no taxi driver, that is, can afford to have his own decent apartment. Oh, a crappy one in a barrio or a slum, but not a decent apartment. So, he says he rooms with two other taxi drivers. They pay $2,000 a month between them. And he said they never can get ahead. They never can save enough to own their own taxis or own their own houses. So, what's that mean for a gringo expat? Well, if you got loads of money, that's okay. You can move to Europe and live just fine, just like the retirement rags tell you. But if you're planning on retiring on just the average Social Security check of 15 to maybe 1,800 bucks a month, you're in the same boat, even a bit worse than the taxi driver I was talking about. However, and I hate repeating this once again, on $15 to $1,800 a month, if you're single, you could live an absolute first world lifestyle in Latin America, provided you don't live on or near the gringo tourist trail. But you knew that already, right? All right, let's get to those emails. This one's from Jeffrey with a G. You know, that British Jeffrey, Joffrey. He says, Johnny, love the show. Everyone talks about the good life and how to get there. Well, for me, the key to life, the good life that is eliminate stress. That's primary. That's number one. Number two, win the lottery. Number three, move to a quiet, low-government, slightly chaotic country getaway in Latin America, preferably in the boonies, miles away from a big city. If you can do all that, and you will have a relaxed and stress-free life. No muss, no fuss. But like everything else that seems simple and easy, it's much easier said than done. As for me, Jeffrey with a G says, so far that plan's working for me, except I haven't won the lottery yet. All right, Jeffrey with a G, thanks for that. By the way, I read his little emails because he mentioned the lottery. And if you remember, just a few shows ago, I spoke about the crazy-ass guys that sell lottery tickets on every corner here in Latin America. Are they legit or not? Who knows? I never met a real big winner, that's for sure. That is, I never knew a lottery winner here in Latin America, but I knew a lottery winner who won the Canadian lottery. For a while, I was a good friend of that guy and was in business with him down in Costa Rica back in the late 90s. You longtime listeners may have heard me tell part of that story. He was a gym teacher slash ski instructor who hit the Canadian $1 million lottery. Now, you think because he was in his 30s and a college graduate, he should have known a bit about finances, but he didn't. Well, he got bad advice or took no advice at all. So he became sort of a lottery cliche, if you know what I mean. Rags to riches, won big and nearly lost it all. Or perhaps he was just financially illiterate, like most of us are when we get out of high school, even college. He blew half that money within a year. He had friends and relatives hitting him up for loans. He told me every time they went out for dinner with family and friends, everyone expected him to pay. If not, there'd be some tension and he'd get the evil eye. After all, he was the rich guy and should share the wealth, right? He said he even had people come up to him in the grocery store, people he went to high school with and hadn't seen for 15 years. Just former acquaintances who now came on to him like best friends. Then he did something really stupid, followed one of his old dreams. He always wanted to open a restaurant, though he'd never run one before. So he opened one, spent a lot of money, and hired lots of his relatives because his mother put the pressure on him to do so. You know, blood is thicker than water and all that. That rarely ends well. It certainly didn't for him, which wiped out half of his remaining dough. In the end, him and his wife just picked up and left Canada, moved to Costa Rica. That's where I met him, lived next door to me. At that point, just 3 or 4 years after his win, he only had $250,000 left of more than a million and nothing to show for it, except bruised and ruined friendships. That's how he and his wife explained to me the consequences of being a lottery winner. And you know, I asked him, would you rather have not won the lottery at all? She said, probably not. And he said, well, I wouldn't go that far. After all, they ended up in Latin America and were having a great time of it in Costa Rica. Well, there's more to that story, and I told little bits and pieces of it in previous shows. Let's just say our friendship did not end well. We were in business together, and he was stealing from the till, little by little. Yep, I admit, I have had bad luck with business partnerships here in Latin America. I've had business partners 4 or 5 times, and only one of them worked out well for me. And believe it or not, the good guy was a Latino. The rest, gringos and expats. Exactly opposite of what you'd have thunk, huh? Oh well, I'm still standing, and some of those guys aren't. All right, digging into the email file, here's one from Sly. He says, Johnny, you've been talking a lot lately about mating and dating in Latin America and the Cupid sites. As for me, Johnny, I always considered myself slightly above average in the looks department. A solid 7.5, and when cleaned up, an 8. Different people have confirmed that to me as well. Even so, I've not been lucky in the love and romance department. Did a lot of bar hopping in the old days, and in the end, it wasn't good for me. For example, more times than I care to remember, I'd go home from a bar at closing time at 2 with a 10, and I'd wake up the next morning at 10 with a 2. He says, I've used Tinder and there's U.S. dating apps, and I've learned to subtract 2 points from whatever her picture looks like. They're always taking 100 pictures and post the best one. I look like a 10 in a couple of my 100 pictures that I took as well, so the ladies would be wise to subtract 2 points from my photo pick, too. You know what, Johnny? I'm just tired of those apps. Swiping and swiping and swiping and swiping. I don't want to call it an addiction, but it's close to it. By the way, USA ladies, he says, a girl who's a 6 with an advanced degree is still a 6. Your education and your career have no bearing on your desirability to men. We'll happily date a 9 who works at Starbucks over an astronaut who's a 6. I know that comment won't sit well with the ladies, but Johnny, the truth is the truth. Anyhow, my question is the same one a guy wrote to you about a couple of shows ago. When in Latin America and in the dating game, I'm worried about not having anything else in common except, you know, the sexual attraction thing. Because honestly, John, even if she's a 10, if you got nothing to talk about to the girl, it'll get old. Something's got to give. All right, Sly, in a word or a couple of words, learn Spanish. I said the very same thing to the guy who asked that question a few weeks ago. You better learn more than kitchen Spanish or you will most likely have nothing much to talk about except the weather and what's trending on TikTok. What a revolting development that would be. Now, as far as going home from a Latin American bar at 2 with a 10 and waking up at 10 the next day with a 2, well, for one thing, down here in Latin America, you don't see many 2s at all. Most teenage 20-something, 30-something, even 40-something girls will spend their last peso up in their game at the beauty salon. I'll tell you something, and it's not much of a stretch. Latinas in the mating and dating game would rather spend their last dime at the beauty parlor than on a meal. So for sure, you're almost always going to see Latinas at their best, especially on weekends. That includes school, work, and the grocery store. Yep, it's true. I've known Latinas who will spend a half hour getting made up for a 5-minute run to the grocery store. If you think American girls spend lots of money at the beauty parlors, Latin American ladies will spend their last dime, I mean their last dime, to look good. Looking good is an absolute priority. Man, the competition is fierce, too. So, again, as far as the possibility of waking up at 10 with a 2, I can only see that happening if you've been out with Captain Mango the night before and drinking what he's drinking. All right, now an email from Brutus. Do you think that's his real name, Brutus? Anyway, Brutus says, Johnny, the convenience in my middle-class Atlanta neighborhood is wonderful. I have dozens of restaurants nearby, about a half dozen grocery stores, including a few specializing in ethnic food, and a large hospital and large mall within a few blocks. It's not enough to keep me here, though, since I've been robbed on the street twice in the last year. I'm not going to tell you the ethnicity of the attackers. That would get me canceled. I'll let you guess. By the way, Johnny, people who never would have considered it before are starting to put up bars on their windows. I'm 40 years old, Johnny, and this is not the America I grew up in, and definitely not the America my parents grew up in. I'm putting together a nest egg right now for me and my wife, looking forward to moving out of the country and enjoying the rest of our lives without oppressive government, without constant monitoring of everything we do. I no longer want to witness the complete dumbing down of all the young people I meet. I don't want my kid growing up in a world of mental midgets. Though I realize he'll rise to the top in that kind of society, that's a small consolation. I don't want to see it happen. Here in Atlanta, people keep losing their jobs, yet I keep looking at all the huge government buildings that keep on going up and the old ones that keep getting remodeled over and over again. All that going on as the potholes in my once nice neighborhood get bigger and bigger and whole sections of streetlights aren't working anymore. What's going on? Are these people out of their minds? Needless to say, I'm not proud of being American anymore, but sad. The whole government bureaucratic machine is such a terrible waste of money and manpower. I don't know if it's stupidity or an actual plan. Doesn't matter. I'm out. I'm throwing in the towel. Give me 2 years, John, and me and my family will be south of the border for keeps. Or, as you put it, south of the border. We'll be skipping Mexico, thank you very much. Enough of Mexico has already moved into the neighborhood. Central America, here I come. See ya when I get there. Signed, Brutus. All right, Brutus, thanks for that little update on Atlanta. Come on, your parents didn't really name you Brutus, did they? Did you get your ass kicked a lot as a kid? Did it toughen you up? I wonder. Anyway, Brutus, about the bars on the window thing. You know, when you move down to Latin America, you're going to see that kind of thing everywhere, except within gated, guarded communities. You know, where the only entrance is through a guard gate and you got to sign in and all that. It's just the way it is. It's always been like that. Even if you're in a really nice neighborhood and it's completely safe, people will still put bars on their windows. Lots of times, though, it's just decoration, really nice wrought iron work. Though most times, especially in barrios, it's for actual protection. Because you see, here in Latin America, certain lower classes of people do have very sticky fingers. I'm speaking from personal experience since I've had a couple of cleaning ladies lift stuff from me. Gardeners, too. Funny thing, though, I'd say ever since the last 10 or 15 years since I've been installing high-quality cameras in and around the house, I've had pretty much zero pilferage. So keep that in mind. Cameras are cheap. In fact, If you're thinking about installing the latest, greatest 4K or even 8K cameras, wow, super high definition there. I'll give you some tips, makes and models, and where to get the best deals. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. By the way, in the background, can you hear a little buzzer going off? It's going off about once a second. If you can hear it, and I can, that's because we just got hit with a lightning storm and I'm on battery backup. No problem, because I've got a battery backup system that'll last about 10 hours. And now an email from an ornery gringo living in Latin America. He signs it Ornery Orson. He says, Johnny, I've been living in Guatemala for a couple of years now. I've got my complaints, but I'll never leave. I'm here for good. It's much better than the U.S. in most every way. However, there are some things that drive me nuts. So I'm writing you about the things that get on my nerves. I'm not going to whine about the usual suspects, the bad roads, the terrible drivers, mañana time, and workers who come in and make a huge mess and then leave. Anyone who's lived down here knows about that, and you talk about it on your show too. For me, it's the noise. I really have become aware of how this society, Latin society, has no awareness or consideration of other people's boundaries when it comes to sound and noise pollution, especially when it comes to blasting music that others have no interest whatsoever in hearing. Ornery Orson says, I can take the roosters and the junk man yelling through a megaphone at 7 in the morning. And I can take the lemon and mango and avocado hawkers pushing their carts by the house at 7 a.m. I get it. They're just trying to make a living. But when it comes to just pure senseless noise, there's an incredible sense of entitlement from a lot of macho fools who seem to think we want to hear their retarded music choices. It's blasting out of cars and houses when you're walking through the park, at the beach, everywhere. They always seem to have it cranked up at full volume. It's not just the music either. Idiot macho fools modify their cars, trucks, motorcycles, etc. with high-powered stereos and extra-loud exhaust pipes. They take every opportunity to make it sound louder than the next fool's noisy piece of junk. I just don't get it. They've got these big-ass expensive stereos and these rusted-out pieces of junk, too. It doesn't make sense. Some stereos are worth more than the car itself. Not to me, but to someone. Worse yet, the icing on the cake? The neon rims and the turn signal light show. The brain size of these epic macho fools must be microscopic. I mean, really, Johnny. What's more ridiculous than taking a Honda Civic, Nissan Sentra, or a Kia Picanto, jacking it up, outfitting it with spoilers and chrome rims, and a stereo that fills the entire back seat, that rattles your windows when it rolls by? Only a Latin American pea brain or a U.S. ghetto retard would do that. Just who are they trying to impress but other like-minded, soon-to-be deaf pinheads? I repeat, Johnny, I don't get it. Sometimes at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll be laying in bed or walking the dog in my sort of middle-class Latin neighborhood. Sometimes after midnight, I'll take some time to look up at the stars. It's great. Have you tried it? You can really see millions of them when you're south of the border. And just when I'm having a spectacular moment looking up at the stars, I'll hear some a-hole on a motorcycle approaching in the far distance, revving it up, flooring it, going all out, just for the noise effect at 1 or 2 in the morning. Good job I don't carry a gun. Signed, Ornery Orson. Well, Mr. O, Mr. Double O, that is. I can tell you there's lots of gringos and expats with a love-hate relationship with Latin America, but they'll never leave either. Nothing's perfect, right? There's the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Now, where have I heard that before? There's things I absolutely hate about Latin America, too. Sometimes the noise pollution does get to me. But none of that stuff in any way equals the disdain I have for what's happened in America over the last 10 or 20 years and the absolute disgust I have for American politicians. Yep, Double O, I'm with you. I'm glad I'm not packing a rod either. The thing is, you know, there are noise ordinances and laws throughout Latin America. The problem is, though, they're only enforced in the nicer neighborhoods. Fact is, if you're in a really nice neighborhood and you got your trunk open, blasting your boombox, the cops will stop you and give you a fine. I've seen it done. I know, it sounds so crazy. In a regular poor or middle-class neighborhood, they won't stop a car going through a red light or an idiot motorcyclist going the wrong way down a one-way street. But in a high-end neighborhood, if the music's too loud and a neighbor calls the cops will show up, knock on the door, and tell you to pipe down or else. Though, that'll never happen in a barrio or a middle-class neighborhood. I've seen it happen in upscale parties and fiestas myself. I've also been to parties in barrios at 2 in the morning where you could go deaf. And there isn't a thing in the world that'll stop the noise. So just note that if you move into Latin America, the better the neighborhood, the more guaranteed peace and quiet you'll have. By the way, another thing you might want to know is that if you live in a high-end neighborhood or an upper middle class or even wealthy neighborhood, you'll never hear a chicken bus rip by. Somehow, the wealthier neighborhoods and subdivisions have worked it out so that chicken buses never get too close to or have bus stops nearby. Though, of course, in some really big gated guarded communities, oftentimes there'll be a bus stop right outside the main entrance road that goes past the guard shack. After all, there has to be a stop close by to drop off all the workers that will enter that community in the morning to do their jobs. Cleaning ladies, gardeners, maintenance guys. That means there'll be lots of action and lots of noise on that main road. But once you're past the guard station, it's like you're on a different planet. Wide roads, good lighting, nice landscaping, no traffic. So that means if I were to guess, I'd say our emailer, Mr. Double O, does not live in a gated, guarded community. Anyway, that's my guess. Just saying. By the way, speaking of Captain Mango. Now, earlier on, I did mention Captain Mango, didn't I? He's got a few good noise pollution stories, too. Because for a while, I think for longer than a year, he lived close to a cantina, a mini market, a chicken bus stop, and a main road. I remember him telling me that oftentimes the noise would drive him nuts. He said he was so glad he wasn't packing heat either. But that's what you get if you're paying really cheap rent. So then what's my definition of really cheap rent? Well, in Latin America, that'd be $150 to maybe $300 a month. There are lots and lots of apartments in that range, but you'll probably get a big dose of noise pollution at no extra charge. A lot of people don't mind. They can handle it. But I, for one, cannot tune that shit out. Funny thing, too, we're talking about a sort of common courtesy. A nice, quiet neighborhood is something to strive for. We all know up in the States, courtesy and chivalry have completely disappeared with Generation Y and Z, etc. Meanwhile, that basic type of good old-fashioned courtesy is alive and well in Latin America, except when it comes to driving in traffic and with noise pollution. How could that be? Good manners and the rule of the jungle at the same time. You know, I've asked myself this question a million times. How can Latinos and Latinas be so kind and nice face-to-face? Genuinely kind and nice, too, and be such disrespectful assholes on the road. But we were talking about noise pollution, right? Regarding that, there is one rule of thumb. The shittier the barrio or neighborhood you live in, the more unbridled the noise pollution.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.